Hello listeners, welcome to a new episode of Computationally Yours. This is Computationally Yours. We are your hosts. I'm Dr. Sabha Kadri.
And I am Arshi Arora. In today's episode, we're going to celebrate another scientific genius. Our next featured scientist in Profiles of Scientific Genius is Gregor Johann Mendel, the father of genetics. Now, the first thing that comes to our mind when we hear Mendel's name are his peapod experiments. Let's talk about that and the events surrounding this monumental event in history and about Gregor Mendel's journey.
Yes, Arshi, his iconic peapod experiments. I think that's the first time that I heard his name as well, which was in high school when we studied these peapod experiments. It's pretty much how my journey in genetics started. This was the first time that we understood the concept of inheritance, how traits are conserved and transferred between progeny through generations. There is a reason why Mendel is called the father of genetics.
True. That used to be so much fun, I remember, in school. And also, I think we used to guess our heights on the basis of our parents' height when I started learning about inheritability and genetics. But we are jumping ahead. Let's share a bit about Mendel first. Johann Mendel was born in the year 1822 on July 20th, what is now the Czech Republic, into the family of a farmer.
Arshi, we should note here that we are using the names Gregor Mendel and Johann Mendel, or even Gregor Johann Mendel, interchangeably today. But listeners, you need to hold on. There's a mystery about this name, which is going to clear in a bit. So Arshi, let's continue talking about his childhood.
Yeah. So as I mentioned that he was born into a family of a farmer, and while he was sincere in his duties as a farm boy at the age of 11, his local schoolmaster, who was an accomplished horticulturist himself, recognized not only Mendel's intelligence, but his enthusiasm for learning. From there on, he encouraged him to pursue secondary school. Now, one thing we have to see here is that this was the 1800s, right? And his father was a farmer. So the money was kind of tight in the Mendel household, but that did not stop science and research or education.
Yes, it's actually known that Mendel's sister, Theresia, helped pay for some of his educational expenses from her dowry money. Mendel was pursuing a two-year program in practical and theoretical philosophy and physics after graduating from secondary school, and he was excelling in these subjects. And this opened up an opportunity for him to tutor students and pay for some of his expenses, or might I say the modern equivalent of TA-ship, that is teaching assistantship.
That is true. Yeah. You know, actually, speaking of which, I know like a part of my school tuition actually got qualified for a scholarship, which really helped me, by the way. I was just interested and I wanted to look up like, when did the scholarship start? In fact, the concept of federal aid, or the free application for federal application, or FAFSA, was started just 55 years ago. And it started when President Lyndon Johnson signed into law the Higher Education Act of 1965. And that established the U.S. government as the primary provider of financial aid.
That's very interesting, Arshi. I didn't know that. I mean, definitely these kind of student aids help so many students. Anyway, we digress. Let's come back to Mendel.
Yeah.
Around the 1840s, it is said that Mendel fell sick and he had to take a break from everything until he recovered. And such an event happened a couple of times in his life. Finally, in 1844, at the age of 22, when he graduated, instead of going back to his family farm as his father desired, Mendel decided to become a monk. And he joined the Augustinian Order of the St. Thomas Monastery in Brno and began his theological studies, taking the name Gregor.
Ah, so that's how he got the name Gregor. But becoming a monk, isn't that like quite a change in his career path?
True, but at the same time, the monastery was the cultural center of the region, and Mendel had access to a huge library and the research and teaching of various scientists. In fact, the monastery's head, Abbot Knapp, who had more than a passing interest in the hereditary traits of plants and animals, would play a really important role in his life.
Interesting. So he was surrounded by people who were interested in plants and looks like in hereditary traits. First his schoolmaster and then the monastery head, Abbot Knapp. Interesting how life, you know, brings all these people kind of close to you like that.
Yeah, for sure. There are a lot of serendipitous events like that that happen in life that always look like that only in hindsight.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so continuing with Mendel again. He was ordained as a priest in 1847, and life was moving towards where he could get his own parish in 1848, and at a mere young age of 26. But around this time, he felt quite ill again, and the monastery's head, Abbot Knapp, thought to use his skills elsewhere. And so he was made a high school substitute teacher in 1849. He was an excellent educator and started preparing for the teaching state certification examination. However, he could not clear the oral portion of it, and actually he failed at his two attempts that he made to sit for the examination. So he remained an uncertified and a substitute teacher. And with that final milestone, it is known that he started working on his pea garden from 1856 to 1863.
Wow, Arshi, when we hear about these scientific geniuses, right, like you hear of Mendel, you never think of them failing at things as much. I mean, we all know they have stories like this, but it always amazes me to hear such things.
That's a good point, Sabha, yeah. And a lot of people in his biography mention this. We all put them on a pedestal, but like they're humans like us.
Exactly. Well, here's a fun fact for you. During all of this time that he was training for a certification, while he was a substitute teacher, it gave him a lot of time continuing to study science in Vienna. In fact, he even overlapped with Christian Doppler of Doppler effect fame.
Oh, wow. I wonder what that would be like. Physicist and biologist, botanist, did they even interact? Not sure about that.
Would love to be a fly on the wall in that era. Huh?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So now let's cover Mendel's iconic work on peas. What we know so far, that he came from a farming background and had a scientific disposition. Farmers had known for that millennia also that selective breeding yielded favorable outcomes. And what Mendel was really interested in was how to better understand how plant hybridization works. His choice of pea plants was also quite serendipitous for reasons known and unknown to him. And why? Because peas exist in pure separate lines. They are hermaphrodites and are able to self-fertilize before the bud opens. And this kind of helps in keeping in the contamination. And great numbers can be bred in a small space.
So kind of building on that, let's go over Mendel's law briefly. He had two main laws. Let's talk about the very first one. The first one is called the law of segregation. And it's not what you think. It basically states that each parent has two gene variants, which are called alleles. These alleles can either be exactly the same or they can be different from each other. These alleles basically separate or segregate, and one allele from each parent will be selected randomly, which is going to then be passed to the offspring. So let's talk about his pea garden, right? He discovered that when he crossed two true breeding flowers, one white and one purple, what do we mean by true breed? We mean that basically, the flowers have two alleles of the same type. Both of them are the white color allele. So when he crossed the true breeding white flower and the purple flower, the result should be a hybrid offspring. But rather than being a mix of the two colors, the offspring was purple colored. He then conceived the idea of heredity units, which he then called factors. And guess what? These factors were actually a predecessor to the concept of the gene.
Yes, and in 1905, William Bateson, a proponent of Mendel's work, coined the word genetics. And 4 years later, a Danish botanist, Wilhelm Johansson, coined the word gene to describe these Mendelian units of heredity.
Oh, that's so cool. I didn't know those were the origins of the word gene, actually.
Uh-huh. Yeah, interesting.
Okay, so now kind of wrapping up the first law, these factors called genes normally occur in pairs, like I mentioned, in ordinary blood cells. Yet they separate during the formation of the sex cells. These genes can occur in different versions. Either it's a dominant trait or a recessive trait. So in the case of the purple and white flowers, the hybrid progeny will occur in a mix of purple and white flowers in the ratio of 3:1, depending on which color gene codes for the dominant and the recessive gene. Let's put this in simple human trait terms. A few episodes ago, we were discussing the genetics of hair, right? We were talking about my hair, which was curly.
Yeah.
So when a hair type is concerned, curly is actually a dominant trait and straight hair is a recessive trait. So if one parent possesses the curly hair gene and the other one has a straight hair gene, it's more likely that their child will have some sort of curly hair pattern to their hair, which is true in my case because my dad had curly hair, my mom has straight hair, so mine is curly. I had to slip that in right there.
Yeah. It's always a good idea to talk about hair. Anyways, moving on from that, let's come to the second law. So the second law was the law of independent assortment. What we mean here is that, as Sabha explained, the first law, the segregation of alleles for one gene occurs independently to that of any other gene. So what this is really saying is that now, if you go back to Mendel's pea garden, if you have different traits or different traits of seeds, like round yellow seeds and wrinkled green seeds, as according to the law of segregation, you would expect 75% round yellow and 25% wrinkled green. But in fact, mating showed all possible combinations of the color and texture traits, like they were round yellow, round green, wrinkled yellow, and wrinkled green. And he did this for each of the other 7 type of traits for pea seeds and found that each trait was inherited independently of the others. Today, we know that this rule only holds true if the genes are on separate chromosomes.
Gregor Mendel first presented his findings at 2 meetings of the Natural History Society of Brno in Moravia in early 1865. His paper on the subject, which was titled Experiments on Plant Hybridization, was published in the Society's journal the following year. But at that time, his work was rejected by the scientific community. We've discussed this before, right? How a lot of these paradigm-changing works are not always accepted immediately. The vast significance of Mendel's work was not realized until 1900, when his findings were rediscovered by Hugo de Ryse and Karl Korens after Mendel's death and 35 years after the publication of his paper.
That's a good point you mentioned there. And I was actually wondering, why was Mendel's work recognized after 35 years of him publishing? And I was able to get some insights into that. So firstly, around that time in 1859, Darwin had published The Origin of Species, and Mendel's way of thinking of inheritability was not common. I think it's fair to say that Mendel's work was ahead of time, and the scientific community at that time could not grasp its full importance. Secondly, Mendel did not have successful results when trying to reproduce results with another plant species called milkweed, which actually reproduces in an unusual way. And then shortly after, in 1868, he was elected abbot of his parish, and he got busy with the duties surrounding that. And then he was actually concentrating on becoming a political activist in his later years, during which time he protested the taxation of his parish. So he was not fully working as a scientist. And there is some talk that since the work was coming from a monk, scientific community had their own concerns about it.
You know, Ashri, there you used the term ahead of its time, and it just brings back the memory of us recording the episode about Barbara McClintock and how we use kind of the same terminology there.
True.
But apart from all the things that Ashri just listed, Mendel pursued many other scientific interests throughout his life. In 1865, he founded the Austrian Meteorological Society. Actually, Mendel published more in meteorology. I can't say this word. Meteorology?
Meteorology.
Than biology. He's known for careful, painstaking measurements of groundwater.
Clearly, Sabha, you're not a meteorologist. That's why you can say biology more easy.
That's true.
Never mind. I know we're heading close to the episode, but there's one more thing I want to discuss briefly. That's the Mendel-Fisher controversy or the Mendelian paradox. I'm going to talk very briefly about it, as I said, but there is more in the references mentioned on the website. So in 1936, Fisher, the Fisher exact test, Ronald A. Fisher, used a Pearson chi-square test to analyze Mendel's data and concluded that Mendel's results with the predicted ratios were far too perfect. Fisher had shown that the results obtained by Mendel were too close to what one would expect, suggesting that something other than chance was involved. There were too few random errors, and his math was too precise. He quoted a 1 in 2,000 chance that the experiments happened that way. There's a lot more to read about it, so I just want to quickly mention it, but go ahead and read more about it in the references. But it is important to point out that Fisher had respect for Mendel and believed in the integrity of his work.
I want to repeat that you should definitely go and read the reference that Arshi suggested. It is very interesting. I didn't know much about it until Arshi pointed me to it.
Yeah.
So listeners, that brings us to the end of this episode. And before ending, I would like to share one of Gregor Mendel's quote with you. The value and utility of any experiment are determined by the fitness of the material to the purpose for which it is used. And thus, in the case before us, it cannot be immaterial what plants are subjected to experiment and in what manner such experiment is conducted. I know this is a long quote, but I think it holds true for all scientific experiments and the integrity of those experiments as well.
Listeners, let us know how you like this different format of this one more episode in Scientific Geniuses. Share your comments and let us know if you would like us to feature a scientific genius of your choice. Please remember to subscribe to us so you're up to date on our weekly releases every Tuesday. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Details are in the description below.
And until next time, this is Computationally Yours.